Turks. I like to eat Turks.
I know.
I know. It's all right. Oh, I know. I'll wait and then I'll stand up.
Hello, everybody. It's my pleasure, my honor, to welcome you this afternoon to this incredible place. And before anything else, I know a lot of thanks have already been said this morning, but I have to thank quite a lot of people for this. Okay. So the first person that needs to be thanked is the president of the Assemblea Da Repubblica. Is that how you say this? Okay.
Close enough.
Okay. And then we have this morning you had, and unfortunately I didn't, had the privilege of hearing the President of the Education and Science Commission, Mr. Alexandre Quintanilla, maybe.
Quintanilla.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's an honor for me and for us and a privilege to be here. I'm sure you've been told about the building. It's a former Benedictine monastery. It's been here for a very long time. Absolutely fabulous building. I have no words to express my gratitude to these people for letting us use these rooms. It's absolutely fabulous. The next people I need to thank are this man, Rico Reis. And now I also, pronunciation is going to be difficult. Yo Paulo Almeida Sousa, is that correct, more or less? These people are the presidents of IPST, is that right? It is IPST, not ISPT, and CNPMA. So, the competent authorities in Portugal in charge of hematopoietic stem cell transplantation and human fertility. It is they and their staff who have made this possible, and so we do owe them an enormous debt of gratitude. The next on the list are the institutions, the European Union institutions. We wouldn't be here without them. It's a great shame they can't be here. I think they wanted to be here. They support us. The unions, I feel the institutions are changing, and it's becoming a world where they help us rather than us. It's definitely in a joint action, a partnership. And I've definitely felt that they are there for us and for you. So for Stefan van der Spiegel and for Anna Hocker, Moncho, I have a great deal of thanks to give, and so do we. And on a much more personal level, there's this young lady over here and this young lady over here, who personally I thank for everything. You've been wonderful, and we've been awful, and you've been great. And then there's him up there, right? The young man who is actually the coordinator of this project, Milo Vatueva, who joined us in January. And thanks for everything, Milo. And then there's the man at the end. He is stubborn. He is intelligent. He is kind. And he is very knowledgeable, and it's been a privilege to have his help for the last 7 months. Thank you very much. Okay, and then finally, you, because you've been you've put up with us. I mean, we organized this in a period, I think it must be a record to organize an international meeting in under a month. And you've come. And that meant a great deal of flexibility, a great deal of reactivity, a lot of stress. And I apologize for that, but above all, I thank you for coming. Okay. Now, when Patricia and I started to organize this meeting in March, I think, end of February maybe, okay, so we did actually start early enough, believe it or not, we thought we would fill this room. Do you remember? We thought we would have 150 to 200 people in this room, and we thought we would invite everybody. We thought we would invite the ministers. We thought we'd invite their staff. We thought we'd invite the donors. We thought we'd invite the patients' associations. We thought we'd invite the donor-conceived people, the hematologists. And fortunately, there's somebody around who's got a head on his shoulders and says, no, we're not ready for that yet. And that's Carlos. He said, no, the people we need to talk to today, because the things that Artics are saying are not unanimously agreed upon by everybody. What people are doing doesn't necessarily follow the 8 commandments, if you'd so like, if you want to think of it that way. We need to talk to the competent authorities first. And this meeting is therefore, again, about you. I see you say that phrase a great deal, but it is. These meetings are after the competent authorities. And what we are hoping and is that in this small group of 40 people, which is what we are, we will be able to sort of reach the objective of this meeting, which is to create a community or to favor the creation of a community, both within the hematopoietic stem cells, where it's maybe less necessary because, as you'll see over the next 2 days, very strong communities exist already. But in ART, where we have widely different practices and widely different levels of maturity, I think there's probably a great deal to be gained by working for the Agile to be made seen to work with the Human Fertility and Embryo Authority or with the Conseil National de Proximité Médicale Assistée. It's very important that we are able to know each other and work together and share experience. And if you look, as we will in a minute, at the objectives of this project, you'll actually see that that's what we're supposed to do. So I didn't invent that. The people who wrote the project did. I don't know if they realized that it would be taken so literally. So what I'm hoping over these 36 hours is that we all know each other a lot better by the end of them than we did at the start of them. Now, obviously some of us know each other already, but I don't know all the people in this room, and I don't think you all know me, and I'm sure there are people here you don't know at all. So we're going to have some interesting presentations, but I think that the coffee breaks and the meals are as important as the presentations. And I do want to also want as much as possible the speakers and you to make the sessions interactive. If you don't agree, if you have a different experience, if you have a different points of view, then I'd like you to say so. Can I play with you, please? I think, yeah. I mean, you don't have to do this, but, you know, there are some people sitting up there and over other people over there and over other people. Don't you think it'd be better if we all got closer together and sat in a smaller group? And, you know, why are all the seats? It's like being in a classroom. Why are all the seats at the front of the auditorium empty? Don't you think you could all move down and move closer? Can you do that for me? Or is that unfair? Oh, isn't that amazing? They're going to do it. Thank you very much. Okay. Well done, Milan. You see, he always sat at the back of the class as a boy, you can tell. That's the first challenge. The second challenge is, do you know all the people who are sitting next to you? Do you know each other? Because if you don't, then please say hello and say good to each other. Okay. Right. So. Today, what I would like to do is I would like to show the agenda, but I think you've all got the agenda in your papers. So if you could have a look at it, please, that would be useful. Don't do it. No, go back one. Sorry, I don't have it. Okay. If you could pull out the agenda from your papers and look at it, please, that'd be useful. You don't have to do it. Anyway, this afternoon it's the project that's going to talk. Okay. The first half of the afternoon we're going to talk about the ART. With Eureka, who will start, and Francoise, and Carlos. And then after that, we'll talk about the hematic stem cell, and particular stem cells, and the donor follow-up. The work package 5 of ARTIX deals with two things. It deals with donor follow-up, and it deals with cord blood banking, quality, and safety. Okay. So we'll start off with Christina, who's going to tell us what ARTIX has thought for donor follow-up. And I hope that will be, she will tell us, but I'm hoping that's going to be consensual and we're going to be able to move forwards from what has been determined by the project, and this will lead to different horizons. Then, unfortunately, Vanya Nikolov from Zagreb, from Croatia, who is the work package leader for the cord blood banking, couldn't be here. She's unwell. And so Salome Maya is here, I believe, and is going to... Hello. Thank you very much. Salome has accepted to talk about the cord blood bank work in ARTIX. So she will talk after Christina. In fact, I'm changing the agenda slightly. Okay. And then there will be Mona, who is somewhere. Hi. Do you know each other, Salome, Mona? Anyway, Mona is going to do something very interesting for us. She's going to compare the recommendations for inspection guidance in the field of ART with those that were prepared in the field of cord blood banking. And since these two things were actually done independently, it should be interesting to see what common ground they have and don't. After that, there'll be Nick Jones and myself, and I hope Christina, but she might not feel up to it, unfortunately, who will be hosting a discussion where basically, I hope it's you that's going to talk rather than us. If we have to sew that, we will. Tomorrow, we will hear from two things. We will hear from I always want to speak French, the Société Savante, the professional societies, the EBMT, and from ESHRA, about how they perceive the competent authorities, how they perceive the products of the project, and so on. And then, in the last part of the afternoon, we'll be talking about the future, and I think Carlos will be able to tell you more about that. Now, that's really what I wanted to say. The most important thing that I said was thank you. And okay, before we start, I wanted to pass, I think, four slides, only because it's useful to pass these slides so that other people don't have to say the same thing every time they talk, if that's all right with you. Can you? Thanks. Okay, next. Okay, that's just facts. Okay, that's what ARTIX is. Okay, 2 million. Okay, the field. Next. That's what ARTIX really is. Okay. Those are the partners on the left and the collaborative partners on the right. And I put the CNPMA in purple because they do a lot more than being a collaborative partner in this project. Next. So it doesn't have to be said by anybody else. That is the European legal structure. I'm not going to talk about it. Unless you want me to, but you all know the contents of this legislation. It's what you've transposed into your law. It's what you apply. Okay. what we produce, technically, there are three deliverables for ART. We did in 2015, we did a survey of all the competent authorities in the project, and then we extended it with another 11 competent authorities on what you do and how you work and how you're organized. We then wrote the inspection guidelines, which are based on a document produced by Soho, I believe. Is that right? Anyway, specifically for ART, and we have just recently we're in the process of finishing the institutional guidelines. We had a major revision of that work this year. Okay. Work package 5 has got three deliverables. The first is a bit up and apart because it's about hematopoietic stem cell donors and their follow-up. And then the two last deliverables about cord blood banking. The first is guidelines for cord blood banks and their practices. And the second is basically an inspection grid for what to check in a cord blood bank. Christina will correct me when I go wrong. Or Owen, or... Okay, you're next. Okay, this is important. What was written in the grant agreement was that we should develop ART-specific knowledge in each member state. That is so the Commission has people in the member states, in the competent authorities, who know what they're talking about. I hope ARTIX, through its training, has been able to provide that to a certain extent. The second objective was to provide the specifications, not just words, but specifications for NHSC donor follow-up register. Okay. I hope we'll find out whether we've done that. And the third was to provide the guidelines. Next. The outcomes, existence of expertise, okay. But maybe we need more than that, okay? And then through the cord blood banks and so on. It's the same thing said differently, okay? Next. Okay. That's a bit more fun. It's the same thing, repeated, but what it means is the activities of the project are to promote change. And to communicate and disseminate and to train. Next. Okay. What's really important? Go back to the black one. What's really important is that in there is an idea that within ART, there will be a network of competent authorities. And this network will either be formal, supported by the European Commission, or informal. But it will exist, and we're here today to seed that, to see each other again, and to start to build these relationships so it will happen. The meeting in November in Brussels will decide whether this will be officialized or not, but it's not, we don't absolutely need to have the institutional support to work together, okay? And I think that's the main thing that I'm aiming to achieve with you today and tomorrow, is that we know each other and we can work together in the future. Okay. Before I finish, I would like to thank the organizers, and particularly Patricia and Anarita, because without them, we wouldn't be here. Okay. So, if you don't mind...
Now it's my turn, Anarita. Well, I'm starting. You see there, I'm the president of the ART National Council, but besides that, and I would like to start to point out this. I'm a judge in the Appeal Court of Lisbon, and I'm the president of one of the first chamber of this court, and one of the not so positive aspects of our organization is that I'm at the same time both things. which means that the work of the council interferes with my work in the court, and my work in the court interferes with my work in the council. That is why I will not be here probably tomorrow, because it's the day of the session in my chamber, and I have to preside it, so I have to be there. And there are some discussions in my court that have to be made, and the president of the court will go to my chamber to speak about it at our invitation, and so I have to be there tomorrow. So I ask you to excuse me in advance, because I will not be here tomorrow, and I would like that it is very clear that it is not because we are not dealing with ART mainly, but it's because of this other occupation that I have. I must stress something that I heard now, which was a bit of a surprise to me, to hear that we are going to have network in ART, officially or unofficially. And that is personally something that I would like very much. And as human beings, please remember that, and this is the lawyer speaking, society precedes the law and even the state. The organization of society in the state, and nowadays in our countries, in states that are governed by the rule of law, it's a recent acquisition, as 200 years. And people could relate before, which means that even if it's not official, although I would like that it could be official, we can relate, and I think we will relate. And that is very important not for us, but for the people that depends on our regulations. By the way, just one thing. We invited the parliament groups, but on the 5th of October we had an important election, regional election. But it was so important that the president of the main, the opposition leader, now is no longer the president of his party. And the results of one of the parties that supports the government were a bit feeble, to say it mildly, and so they are having problems. So when Professor Alexandre Quintanilha told you that the parliament was almost as hot as, unfortunately, the fires that we have in the northern part of the country, it's true. And that is why the members of parliament are not here. They are discussing other matters, which are very important to the country. Otherwise, I think they will be here because they are very interested in these matters. Not only because last year we had some laws that are passed that still create some friction, surrogacy mainly, but not only that, because at the same time we approved the access of lesbians and single women to the ART proceedings. I called it proceedings because they are not sick. The lesbians and the women or the men that prefer to live alone, they are not sick people. They are normal persons. So ART procedures and not ART treatments. But these laws still, as I said, cause some friction. And so when they knew that this event was going to take place, they were very, I will not say enthusiastic, but interested. But things are what they are, and the results of these elections changed many things, so they thought that they would have to discuss other matters and not this one. But being a judge has another thing going. I will not talk about quantum physics and parallel universes. I will stick to something more earthly. A Spanish professor and philosopher and ethicist called José Ortega y Gasset, he said a very important sentence. Yo soy yo y mi circunstancia. I am me and my circumstance. That means the involvement, our life experience, our family, our upbringing. And so I'm not, in a way, I'm not one of you. I am someone that sits on the side, is interested in these matters, of course, mainly in its ethical and legal aspects, which is my part in your work, but I'm not one of you. Which means that sometimes I look at things a bit different from the way you look. That doesn't mean that my view is better than yours or yours better than mine. They are different. And that is good because in nature, as Darwin said, it is not the strongest. It's the one that is able to adapt that will survive. And so it is good to be different. It is very good if we can combine our difference in the same goal, in the same direction, with the same objectives. As you see in the slides, the rapid development of ART raises complex legal, ethical, and social issues, not only medical. And that is my part, to try to remember you that although your work is indispensable, there are other aspects related with these matters, mainly in ART. As Professor Quintanilla said, there are still some persons who think of ART as the test of babies, as something unnatural. Some of those persons, I think, do it for other reasons than their convictions. But there are persons who are still puzzled and confused when they get out of that frame. They are still confused with the anticonceptive methods, because marriage or the unification of a couple, and of course homosexual couples, that is something that I think that frightens them. It's more that. And the possibility of having sex without the reproduction, abortion, all this. And now we have this thing that is babies without sex. And I think some of them are, it is real, it is something that puzzles them, that makes them feel afraid. And we have to understand those persons, we have to accept them. But at the same time saying, if you don't want to use these technologies, you cannot forbid me for using them. But we have to respect those persons. It's something that we have to think about. The attitudes of ART are influenced by specific culture and social contexts. As I said before, your upbringing, the way you were raised, your family environment, what you are taught when you were young, forms yourself. Some of us have the ability to transcend that, to learn with experience. Some not. We took 10 years since the first law to have this change. The first law on ART is from 2006. These laws have changed the perspective, and it changed a lot the perspective of ART. Took 10 years. So it's not always easy. But these laws have to be the result and not the kicking forward. A law to be obeyed has to be understood by the people. People have to think that that law is fair, is just. Otherwise, they will not submit to her. So you cannot go too fast. You have to go slowly but steadily. And then there are some technical problems about surveillance schemes, safety, the quality of the biological products. That is another thing that we have to discuss. I said it before, some ethical questions linger and probably will still linger. Some of them are there. Is it acceptable to use surplus embryos for research? Could they be donated for another person or couple? Should they be frozen for future us? Should they be destroyed? Who has the right to make those decisions? To provide of the gametes the medical personnel, the policymakers? Who? Should we leave it to the individual physician's discretion to determine? No. Prossima. Which is very interesting. Well, a few years ago, we had a conference organized by the council, and one of the radios tried to do a program about what we were going to discuss. It's one of those talks. It's not well talk show. People can call and talk about it. And it was a bit of a flop because people didn't appear. You see on television and on radio, normally everybody wants to talk about anything. In that case, it didn't happen. Why? Because, as I said, people are still a bit afraid about these questions. The discussions, the debates, I'd rather prefer this word, the debates are held in small groups, not by the public opinion. Interestingly enough, this the surrogacy, not the other one, not the other law, but surrogacy is it's been discussed very, very widely in popular shows on television and radios, which is interesting. Maybe we can do something about it and try to break out from this small windows. You have on the slide some ideas, but I would rather talk about another thing. This morning I told you, again, this is the questions. This is the questions that are raised. You can read it, so I will not. I will not tell them. Go back to the other one. The other one. About this problem, because this is the essential part. ART raises complex legal, ethical, and social issues. This is the main question. I told you this morning that we should have a separate directive for ART, for the human reproductive cells and tissues. And I do. And I would like that our networking process would be official, because I like things to be official. As I told you, I'm a judge, of course. I like the law. I like rules. But the thing is, the perceptions of society about these matters, they change. I have some interesting quotes coming back from the 4th century before Christ, a man called Heraclitus of Ephesus. He said, "No man ever steps in the same river twice." Marcus Tullius Cicero, on the 1st century before Christ, said, "O tempora, o mores," which means the customs change according to time. And our main poet, Luís Vaz de Camões, which is so important, and I think it's a good thing that our main holiday is the day that celebrates his death, the day he died, the 10th of June. And he said, "Mudam-se os tempos, mudam-se as vontades, muda-se o ser, muda-se a confiança, todo mundo é composto de mudança, tomando sempre novas qualidades." Well, it means with time the will changes, the being changes. As Heraclitus said, no man ever steps, or no person, well, you must forgive the ancient Greeks, women were not very esteemed by then. No person ever steps into the same river twice, and he said, because the times are different. The water may even be the same, but it is not. But furthermore, or above all, you will not be the same. Time, the current of the time, will change you. And that's what happens with the public perception or the social perception about these matters. So, with every change, I told you about this election on the 5th of October, it's a different perception. There are some huge differences in what happened, the situation before and after these elections. So sometimes things change. So should we make a law about that change? Or should we wait and see what happens? Certainty, security, are not words that for me should be used in vain. Not only God's name should not be used in vain. Certain words should not be used in vain. Certainty and security are concepts that are essential to our life as persons and in a society. So we shouldn't pass laws every time there is a change. We should wait a bit. But still change happens. And so what can we do in the meantime? So we have to choose some persons and give them the power to regulate between laws. And the thing is that those persons should be chosen very carefully because they have a relatively huge amount of power. For instance, our council decided something that is not yet in the law. It's that in a lesbian couple, one could be the provider of the embryos and of the ovocyte, oocyte, and the other could do the pregnancy. It is not still in law, but we have decided that. Some years ago, we decided that there was a limited period of time after which the embryos could be destroyed. Now that is in the law. So it was our decision was cemented enough to become a law. So you see, and I could multiply the examples. And this is, in my view, the best way to deal with these problems. Of course, the key issue here is who are those persons? And it is very important. In Portugal, the main the person who decides this, or the entity, sorry, who decides this, is Parliament. And that is why we are here, and I think it's a good thing, because we do not depend on the parties, on the government itself. We do not depend on the fluctuations of the electoral period. Our mandates are 5 years, and the electoral mandates of the deputies, of the members of Parliament, is 4 years. So we can pass legislatures. But we are obliged to have our reports discussed in Parliament, in two commissions, the Health Commission and the Science and Education Commission. So we are not kings or queens. We are not even less dictators. We have to account for our work. We have to show the results of our work, and we are questioned about our work. And in these commissions, they are represented all parties have members in Parliament. And I think this is a good solution, because it's flexible enough to make us go with the flow of change, and at the same time, there is not a law that fixes the change. And if our solutions are good, then they become law, but only after a period of time. And that is what I wanted to present to you. A steady organization, but a responsible organization that goes with the flow and helps to promote change. Thank you very much. As you wish.
I think we should take the time to ask questions, even though we are running late. I think we started late, so we're on time, and I think it's worth questioning what has been said. If I may allow myself, I will start the ball rolling. Do you want a serious question or a joke question?
The same. For me, it's the same.
Okay. Could you lend, what's his name, Cristiano Ronaldo to each European country in turn to generate the interest in surrogacy over there? Well, that's the joke question. I'm teasing you.
No. I defended Ronaldo publicly when this thing happened, because I said I adore his work ethics. I would like that every Portuguese would be as hardworking as Ronaldo is, and I think he deserves the opportunity to create the family as he wishes. One of the results of the laws that passed last year is that we have this notion of family, one father, one mother, and two or three children, or one children, which is the basic notion of family. And what now we have in Portugal is a system of... you can build the family the way you want.
Okay.
And the main question is this. How far can society and the state, law, go to rule your life? Who knows better what you need in your life than yourself? The only thing that matters with this is that you have to respect a very important rule. Do no harm to others.
Thank you. Any, Christina?
Press the button.
Okay. Much better. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your presentation and some topics, and especially interesting because you discussed them in a parliament where We probably have not so many technicians as we usually are in our groups and or competent authorities. I have a question concerning asking you an opinion. If it will happen that Portugal or other countries become very democratic or very free in allowing rules and habits that are usually not available in other countries, like in Italy. Italy is very restrictive. Don't you imagine that many Italian couples will come to Portugal or to other easy countries? How do you see this as an impact on culture, on all these many features that you have mentioned before? Because it's not only a technical problem. It's religious, it's political, it's maybe economical. So how can we in Europe come to some standard on some minimal, except technical, of course, standards that are also kind of culture linked or economically linked? We don't have any harmony, I am afraid. What is your opinion?
Yes, we have considered that. The law on surrogacy was born from a proposal made by the Council in 1911. It took us 6 years. And of course we thought about it. Again, it's you don't need to go to different countries. Even here in Portugal, you have persons that think that this is almost a sin. But again, there are persons who think that ART is a sin. We consider this, and we try to create the rules that would minimize the dangers. But there are some degree of tourism, sexual tourism or reproductive tourism. It is a risk that we assume, that we accept, and we thought about it. So we try to create rules to prevent some forms of reproductive tourism, but only some, because in some ways, like the other tourism. Or, you spoke about Italy, and I can speak about Portuguese. We have religious tourism also. So, within certain limits, I even think it's positive. Because if a society was able to create this situation, maybe the people from other countries that have the same problems that we try to solve with our regulation could come here in a safe environment without falling in the hands of traffickers. Maybe it's better to have these safe havens legally established with clean proceedings, instead of forcing people to go to countries where this doesn't happen. It's like this. It is a natural desire to bear children. In our case, the surrogacy is in a very limited, very strict situation. It's for the women who don't have, who were born without the uterus, that lost the uterus, or that have medical situations, for instance, transplantees, that justify the option of choosing another woman to bear their children. A woman that cannot be the donator of the ovocytes. That is a point very, very specific to avoid creating paternity or, in this case, maternity issues. But the thing is, there was a problem. People tried to solve their problem going to strange countries, doing illegal things. And we are trying to solve the problem in a clean way, in a safe haven. And so if people from other countries come to Portugal, we have regulations to establish that things will not go too far. Of course, in any case, any woman human endeavor is not perfect, and there will be faults. But the benefits will compensate the losses, I think.
Can I take a risk, please? You'll forgive me. This is a safe haven. So Francois has asked me a question about your speech, and which joins what Christine was saying. And I'd like to. What you were saying to me was that.
Don't ask me more questions, otherwise I will talk.
One more, just one more, and this is your last one, unless somebody else has something pressing to say. What you said to us concerned the domain of Portuguese sovereignty. You spoke about what you do in your country. And here we are in a European group. And what Christina then asked about was a question of the tensions that activities within the domain of a particular sovereign state might cause for others. The other thing you also mentioned whilst you were talking, just to summarize things a little bit and synthesize to make my point, is that you said that what was required for regulators was that there should be transparency and accountability.
Yes.
Right. Now, how do you, unofficially, just as a wise man, how do you imagine the future of accountability and traceability in the situation of care that is sought in a country other than the country residence of the beneficiary of this care? Do you understand the question?
We try to do most of the things here in Portugal. But don't ask me too many questions, otherwise I will speak the entire afternoon.
5 minutes.
Okay. First of all, cooperation, levels of cooperation. We should go only as far as we can go. Europe is a group of nations. I'm a federalist, by the way, so minority, very, very minority. But I believe that people have to do their own way. So we will have to build this networking. Will have to be, as I said, in the family with a different geometry. We could go as far as we can get, as we are able to go, and should not be forced to do things that we don't want to do. Adapt to our cultures. About that. We have to, in technical aspects, it's different. In technical aspects, I think we should go very far, because we have to assure that the children that are born are in the best conditions possible, and that the persons that intervene, the mother, the father, everyone, or the mothers and the fathers, should get the best treatment possible. I think that is the way. And we should allow the differences related to our ideological. When I use the word ideological, I mean cultural, social, ethical, legal aspects. In that we are different. And or not, maybe we are not that different after all. Maybe we are not as different as sometimes it seems. But we should go carefully, and we should go, I insist on this, up to the point we feel comfortable. Or, in other way, we stop when we stop feeling comfortable.
Erica, thank you. I'm looking forward to having dinner with you, because we'll talk about, we can then talk for several hours about these passionate subjects. Françoise is now going to talk about what Arctics has decided are the responsibilities of competent authorities in ART in the structure of the WP4 work packages. And then Carlos will complete this by presenting the
8 missions that we've identified for the competent authorities, which you will or will not agree with, and hopefully you will discuss. Thank you.
Thank you, Nigel. It's a pleasure for me to present here what we have done during the last 3 years in the frame of the Work Package 4 dedicated to ART of Arctics. We still have a lot of work to finalize everything, but we can list, Nigel said, 3 deliverables. I will add 2 actions. So we performed the survey, it's a D5. We proposed some guidelines for institution, for regulation of ART practices, it's D6. We propose also an inspection guidance, D7. We organized last month in Stockholm, thanks to Mona, training, a very nice training with CA representatives. And we also intend to create a network between ART competent authorities. No. Next slide. So this is a disclaimer that is mandatory. So, okay, next slide. For the starting point of Arctics, the need was clear. It was to obtain a better regulation of ART practices. So I thought that Eurico Weiss, it's a right pronunciation, would agree to say that ART needs to be regulated, but I think it was another kind of question, is the ethical questions of access to ART techniques allowed and so on. For us, at the beginning for Arctics, the objective was to make ART strongly regulated, monitor it, and become a transparent and reliable topics everywhere throughout the EU. Actually, we deplore a lack of visibility and transparency in these activities because it's rapidly evolving and developing, we already said. We deploy reproductive cross-border care because of the potential adverse event consequences when people return in their country of origin. And we also deplore that the private sector is a leader for non-partner donation, recruitment of donors and use of donated reproductive cells that change a little bit medical activities in some kind of business and commercial activities. We know that the mandate of the European Union is quality and safety in donated tissues and cells, but when we speak about assisted reproduction, it seems that EU principles should be extended to other things, to the health of beneficiaries, donors, and children born. And seems also that the roles of the competent authorities should be beyond the technical aspect of quality and safety of products. This was the starting point of Arctics WP4, as we understood, and it was a very nice opportunity to work together, to address these issues, and to work on together to create this network that it would be the red line of the presentation today. Next slide. So we knew that at the beginning of the Arctics, we knew that we would have to face a high diversity of national legislation, it was already said. Due to cultural values, history, and religion, differences between member states, but it is under the sovereignty of the member state, and we don't intend to change and to harmonize legislations of the member states. And the diversity includes healthcare organization and ART practices in terms of access and so on, and techniques allowed, and this is very important for how work package to remind that it is under the sovereignty of the states and we don't have to change anything about that. We also knew that we would have to face the high heterogeneity in the authority position status in terms of competence, so it's already existing, their missions, their responsibilities regarding ART practices, and also the level of investment of the government of the member states. Slides. Certainly the UTCD has given a legal basis shared by all the member states because they all have transposed the UTCD and the technical directives, and theoretically they implemented them. But we also know that the UTCD was initially written for tissues using tissue transplantation terminology, and that the directive was based on the quality and safety of the donated products. This has led to diverse, inappropriate, it's a little bit strong, too strong, or even lack of implementation in the sector of ART. And we know that ART practices represent a highly specialized domain of medicine into the field, within the field of tissues and cells. So regulating such fields needs a high level of expertise, medical, technical, and legal expertise, and a strong involvement of the government. And that's why we want to insist on this regulation. The objective of the work package 4 was to provide to reinforce the regulation of ART within the EU, and it's not an option for us. The objective is to provide national CAs with tools promoting an harmonized and high level of regulation of ART, while respecting, of course, the sovereignty of member states regarding bioethical issues. The deliverables I already mentioned, so it's not necessary in the slide. So going to the first deliverable, it's the survey on institutional practices. So we launched a survey with the partners. We will see. The objective was to have the most complete view of the organization and institutional status in place within the EU after the member states have all transposed the directive, and to bring clarity on the exact situation of the member states regarding the regulation in place for ART. And we also need to assess the needs of the established ART competent authorities in terms of roles and responsibilities, and this deliverable would facilitate in a second step the development of the guidelines for the authorities. The survey was initially carried out among the 12 partners, but one partner didn't answer in 2014. And then we decided to extend it to other countries based on the preliminary results. So the question was, how is organized the national CA, competent authority in charge of ART? What are the roles and the responsibilities given to the national competent authority in terms of legal framework? Is it organized in terms of mission, authorization, inspection, vigilance, data collection, traceability evaluation, communication and information, policy and regulation development. The result confirmed that there was a huge complexity and heterogeneity within the EU, with very highly different organizational systems of governmental structure and different scopes and missions of the competent authorities. The report tried to draw some models, organizational models, with similarities and divergence, but it was not so easy. And this D5 exercise was used in the next deliverable, next slide, the deliverable 6. So the objective was to propose some guidelines for competence authority having the mission to regulate assisted reproduction practices. Donc, the objective was to provide national competence authority with information considering the specific aspect of ART, to list and describe the potential missions and responsibilities of these authorities in charge of ART regulations, to propose recommendations for an appropriate and harmonized regulation, and some summary sheets have been prepared and will be finalized soon, and Carlos will present the 8 missions we described in the deliverable a little on. Next, the inspection guidance in ART. It was decided at the beginning to make a focus on inspection and to provide a very short and operational guidance. And the guidance was designed in 2 parts. The first one is the curriculum, defining the profile of the inspectors in terms of education, personal qualities, behavior, practical experiences, training and responsibilities. Some of those elements are not specific at all, but it's a particular importance in the context of poor resources in the existing authorities to consider the place of experts, external experts, who are not inspectors but could have some missions in inspection. And this issue was addressed in the curriculum. And the second part is a vademecum, that means go with in the pocket. Come with me. Good. And it's a very brief overview of the specific issues in ART, a suggestion of different approaches and methods for inspection that are totally specific for ART. You have 2 examples in the guidance, the embryo tracer process and the mix-up risk analysis. And a suggestion consisted to also take into account the clinical activity during the inspection. The issue we have is that competence authority have to manage resources in order to plan and implement periodic routine inspections of all ART tissue establishments. For example, in France, we have 200 artists, ART tissue establishment, and to perform routine inspection on site for all the tissue establishment for ART in 2 years, it's a real challenge. So it's a problem. We also have to manage resources to promote harmonization during inspection of ART through continuous training of inspectors and by providing inspectorates with shared reference documentation and tools in ART. Indeed, this domain is rapidly evolving and new techniques, changes of legislation occurred, and it's really difficult to be updated. So we need periodic training and documentation evolving. And to provide other member states with guarantees of quality and safety of ART practice, and there we speak about cross-border reproductive care. When necessary, we have to provide and request some information about the result of inspection of our own tissue establishment. Next slide. Training. So the training was held in Stockholm in last September. It was proposed to 2 representatives from CA from each member state, and different workshops were organized with concrete situation. We made it as specific as possible. And it was how to build a competence authority dedicated to ART, or a department or unit in the Ministry of Health dedicated to ART, how to address specificities of inspection of ART establishment, what are the main issues in vigilance and risk assessment, and also how to promote vigilance among professionals. And we spoke about cross-border reproductive care and the specific issues in this scope. And we also address the problem of the emergent threats on ART activities. So next slide, what we would insist on is because of the high heterogeneity of the competent authorities in the member states regarding the organization of the healthcare system and ART regulation. The role, missions, and responsibility we described have to be carried out, that's it, but not only by one competent authority. Can be at regional level, it can be at national level, it depends on the organization of the member state. It can be covered by different authorities or only one dedicated to ART. We are not so lucky as the UK, who has a big, high, efficient competent authority dedicated to ART. We can subcontract with delegate to public bodies or research unit or professional organization. And what is sure that it's so specific that competent authority should develop expertise and collaborate closely with all the stakeholders appropriate for the issues, ART teams, professional organization, patient association, or the competent authority, or the member state, and of course, the European Commission. And finally, well, the last deliverable could be the establishment of an ART experts competence authority network. The objective is to have the essential foundations enabling the reciprocal exchange between CAs, learn from each other experience, share concerns, share alerts, disseminate useful information such it has been made with Kitazato, improve CA competent authority practice in order to attain excellence in the exercise of the complex missions. To address concrete issues on the implementation of the UTCD, and you know that the UTCD is currently under revision, so we have a role to play together, to work on, and to change things if necessary, and to update guidelines we set in the work package and to update as necessary. The proposal was made by the DG Santé from the Commission and will be discussed during, as Nigel said already, will be discussed at the next meeting of the competent authorities for tissues and cells. It could be a network or working group specific for ART and with the support of the European Commission. So thank you for everything. What to do in the coming months? So we have to finalize all the deliverables. The survey was launched in 2014, maybe would need some update. We don't know exactly how it will do. The guidelines have to be approved, and the summary sheets have to be finalized. And there is a role of the external advisory board to review everything in November. About the inspection guidance, we have to incorporate new suggestions already, although it was already published on the public website, but the suggestion came after the publication. And the community have to be created between the competent authorities. So, thank you for your attention. If you have any questions.
Questions? If you have any. Very noisy, man.
Is that the question?
Thank you for that answer. So I'm Nick from HFEA in the UK. Francois, thanks very much indeed. That was very clear and represents a huge amount of work Well done to everyone concerned. Given the heterogeneity of us all in different countries, different competent authorities within those countries, etc., and ERICO essentially saying there is only one way that works best. He's not saying that. I'm teasing. There is one way. I saw the proposal for more work to come, particularly in developing the network. What's stopping us from having not made more progress on that, and what might be the barriers ahead?
Can I? I'll reformulate, if I may. The question is: What are the barriers preventing what precisely? The closer harmonisation of practices within member states? Is that the question? Or because if that's the question, the answer is very straightforward: the sovereignty of the member states. They have full, beyond quality and safety within healthcare. It is a national competency. It's not a community competency, and therefore, okay. But that's not a bad thing, and at all. Okay, but please clarify.
Yeah, I think I get that. I think the sheer heterogeneity of it all and the diversity of practice is inevitably going to get in the way. So what techniques can we use? All the things that ERICO has talked about and the chairman before about talking to each other, engaging and so on. In other words, are there other techniques that we can use to convey in a safe environment what might be more effective?
Again, this is what the French would say is à titre personnel. This is what I think. All right, it doesn't engage anybody but me. I think that these things are things we need to talk about. I think I don't think it's for anybody to say this is the solution. You know, but so I think that's why we need to have these structures of consensus and communication. I do think there are some things that are some kind of good technical tools that are interesting to doing, that are related to providing transparency, providing communication, maybe knowing what a patient who is coming into a hospital in one country has been doing in another would be, especially if they're suddenly presenting with, you know, the 55 and they're presenting with three, with triplets. You might want to know how that happened, and so on. So there are maybe things that we talked a lot about the data. Do you remember we talked about the data dictionary that you have, and we talked about our data dictionary and so on? And I think there are things that we can do in terms of common reporting standards, and there are technical things that we can do to make things simpler to follow. And when things become simpler to follow, then practice evolves generally.
The way I see the network really being very beneficial is particularly regarding the countries that are at a more previous stage of developing their regulation. And so sometimes just a simple, of course there are questions that show up and they are difficult to all of the states, and despite they have already a big experience or less experience in treating these cases. And of course, in here there is also benefit of exchanging ideas, but particularly the ones where some member states already have a large experience dealing very well with some situations. The countries that are a bit starting to cope with this situation will benefit a lot from hearing the experience, to hearing the results, seeing that this is not a big, such a complex situation after all. So this is clearly a very important starting point that will probably enhance and be beneficial to many. So,
if the question was about building of the competent authorities, the survey showed high heterogeneity, but there were some advantages and some inconvenience for different models. Whatever, if it is an autonomous competent authority, or if it is a unit or a department in the Ministry of Health, whatever, or regional, the important, the essential thing is to have enough resources to ensure the main key missions. I think the survey showed that we can have competent authority very highly dedicated, like HFAA, and it can be from this model to another model that only deals with inspection, authorization, and sometimes vigilance. And this competent authority seems to be not so efficient, but less costly, I think, but not so efficient to inform the population of the risk, the consequence, and the advantages to undergo an ART, or to go outside in another country to obtain care that they could not obtain in their country of origin, and so on. And for me, it's really important to have the transparency of the activities and to know exactly how it works, who have access, etc., etc. And regarding the network, I have a lot of questions and a lot of experience shared with Carlos, for example, when we ask for a change of the directive regarding the technical directive, the Commission directive regarding the repetition of the test before each insemination. When it was insemination between partners, we said to the Commission, that doesn't make sense, and they say, oh, who are you, to say that? Because the partners have intercourse in their bed, and so we don't test every time they donate sperm, and so on. And finally, because we have a big fight with the Commission, finally the Commission asked the ECDC, you know the story, and 1 year after we have a new decision that say that every 2 years it's sufficient. So we have a lot of example. We have difficulties actually currently in France about the quality of air and the environment. We just transposed and we have a revolution in our center. They say that doesn't make sense to transpose the quality of air in the lab. So if I had the opportunity, I didn't take the opportunity to speak with everyone here and to say how did you transpose this requirement. So, and I have a lot of stories to tell. So the network is really essential. At the beginning, during the meeting of the competent authority for tissues and cell, there was only the HFAA and the Agence de la Biomedicine, and no one were attended the meeting and knew sufficiently ART to say to the Commission, no, this is not relevant for our sector.
Which, if I may complete her sentence, is why Stefan van der Spiegel asked Artix to increase the levels of competency in the competent authorities in ART and also in... Now, Enrico has the final word. He says he will be very quick, so we can come back in 5 hours. Yeah?
What you said. Let me give you a knowledge from my field, mediation. We are all different. What we should seek is to say, in my country, we do this, 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 and that. And in my country, so and so. And we try, because we are intelligent persons and rational persons, emotional persons also, because Damasio said that there is no reason without emotion, a Portuguese professor, neuroscientist. Taking back from our practices in our countries, we can find some common ground. And that common ground should be transmitted to the European authorities to say, hey, the competent authorities agree on this, and you should take notice of that. And on the other matters, we'll try to find something that will be helpful to us all, and let a small margin, I think, or a big margin, I don't know, I hope small one, that to say, but in this and this aspects, I will keep with my own practices because it's what my country or my society, the society I live in, is able to go. Mediation, it's a thing that we do in the law, and I think it is, this is not the only way. I don't agree with that. But it's a way that I think it's useful and practical. And as Francois said, there is a lot that is that has been achieved, and I think we will achieve even more.
Okay, thank you. Now we are running late, but that's all right. We'll just skip Carlos's presentation. We don't want to hear what he has to say. Now I'm teasing you. Vote. No. You have 20 minutes. We finish this first session at 4, and then we reprogram. We will have coffee, because as I said, that's as important.
Okay, so I was a bit worried that we already passed the coffee break, but we just...
we will reprogram.
Move a little bit the coffee break, and I think we can also move a little bit the end of the day regarding the visit. So anyway, I'll try to go fast. Regarding an overview of these 8 missions that the project has identified as important for competent authorities regarding ART to be hold up. So I will go very fast in this initial slide. We already heard arguments regarding that the requirement for ART activity for effective governance and regulation. And this is does not this is in many situations, regardless of the size, scope, and complexity of the specific competent authorities that exist in each country. And it can even be carried out, these missions, at regional or national levels. They can be covered by different authorities or only one. So this is the sort of decision that each member state has to do, and it regards its own organization, specific organization. And as Francois told, some of these missions can be delegated for the time period you would think that would be possible, and you are happy with this delegation, to public bodies or professional organizations with specific tasks. I'm thinking, for example, the case for registers, where many professional scientific societies have advanced a great deal, but then they are blocked with some logistic problems that it's where competent authorities may help also. And, of course, the need of the increased expertise and collaboration is there all the time, because there are always different and new techniques to come up, and you need to understand them. And so you need a lot of communication with the personnel, the professional organizations, patient associations, and other competent authorities. So these are the missions. We are also saw the list, this list, in Francois' presentation, and you received, it was there on the table, all these missions, more extensively thought about in you have all, and you can, this is a sort of resume for each slide. So regarding the authorization licensing, so this, it would be important to ensure that all ART establishments that provide art activities are accredited, designated, authorized, or licensed. And this regards the professionals that are working there, that are adequately experienced and trained, and both the laboratorial and clinical structures should be authorized. Ensure also that new processes are appropriately validated. Of course, this we have to find ways not to inhibit new processes to come, so because this is a sort of danger, because when some processes are very established, then tend to inhibit new ones to show up. But of course, we need to be sure that there is enough scientific evidence to these new processes, and they will comply to standards, their informed consent, and there is follow-up of the results from these procedures. But they probably should not be inhibited in case all of this is in place. And, of course, ensure that this imported reproductive tissue and cells comply with the UTCD regarding not only distribution within the EU, but also import-export to from and to rest of the world. And so additional care should be in place. Next one. Regarding the inspection, so the competent authority need to ensure that ART establishments providing art activities comply with legal provisions, so to plan and implement the inspections every 2 years, and additionally, if something requires that this to be done, extra inspections, by, of course, in appropriately qualified trained officials. And this joint action has worked a lot on defining and trying to guide inspections into this field. And, of course, we need to think that it's important to inspect both laboratorial and clinical facilities, and that it goes a bit beyond the strict following the tissue directive, but we think it's important to include all the process, including the clinical processes, because if we need to go a bit to see the whole procedure and to see the results of the small segmental procedures that take place in the laboratory. And also to be able to provide information on requests from member states or commission, and in the long run to consider allowing other member states to participate in inspections. We can think on educational purposes, for example, training, but also if it's a situation where there is an impact, a big volume of procedures going there, that with a lot of cross-border, we can envision that this will be important to inspect some with the help of other member states. That one. Regarding traceability, of course, we need to control that traceability is properly ensured for all reproductive tissue in cells, and the implementation of the single EU coding system regarding non-partner gamete donations. And again, here we think it's important to go beyond this implementation of the single European code to all these situations described there, but also to ensure that there is traceability system in place, implemented to allow identification of the possibly affected persons in case of SARE. Next one. Regarding vigilance and surveillance, it's important to understand that it aims to provide, to improve quality and safety in ART practices and learn from encountered difficulties and or mistakes. And so it's very important, and I think this came out also, at least was very clear in discussion in Stockholm, that healthcare providers must understand that the notification of a CR does not lead to inspection by default or administrative sanctions or penalties, of course, except when there is public health or problems or in case of illegal or fraudulent activities. And this understanding is very important so that we do not by the opposite action, by leading immediately to an inspection, probably this would have the inhibition of continuing to declare these situations, and that would not be useful. And so it's important to put things in a more learning and educative way. Of course, this also means that feedback from all these events regarding what is going on in the country is very important, to give this feedback to the tissue to the ART establishments, so that they can understand that there is a benefit of reporting. In this point, it's also important to state that, and there is another joint action which is Vistart, and Cristina is very deep involved in this project, where it's important to harmonize, and this is very, very important to as a goal, but. It's always this balance that we need to do this without compromising specificities of different fields, and particularly ART. And in this case, the adverse reaction and events should be also perceived from my initial variance simulation until the follow-up of the outcome, which is children health. And not only what is already perceived as the recipients or the beneficiaries, and also to extend this to the donors. And this sometimes does not immediately relate to the specific aspects of quality and safety in the laboratory, and goes beyond because it can involve also other medical procedures like hormonal stimulation, etc. So this would be important to be surveyed also. Although clearly these adverse reaction and events regarding this point are mostly associated with the loss of gametes and embryos and the subsequent loss of chance of pregnancy. Okay, so the rest we can go through. Next one. Regarding data collection and management and evaluation and follow-up, of course, this is also an important mission, because it's from all of these that we can build more knowledge, and we go out from a situation of a case you remember where this situation happens. It's very interesting. There are many exceptions, but really the knowledge comes from big data, and this is something that we, the competent authorities, are in a position to collect and ensure that besides collection, they are monitored and evaluated in this, all these ART activities in the establishments are evaluated. So this involves establishing and maintaining sometimes does not involve establishing because it's already in place, but maintaining, improving a national register that should expand to include offspring and non-partner donation follow-up. Quality and safety regarding the processes, all our processes should be evaluated. Of course, all things regarding data collection, it's very important that data security measures are in place, where there is an area that where can be publicly accessible, but there is other areas that only authorized professionals can reach. And so regarding the evaluation, it's very important that we don't restrict this to statisticians, because we need appropriate interpretation, and the interpretation needs to come from professional people. So all of this, of course, to be done appropriately, also puts a lot of emphasis in the resources that the competent authority needs to have in order to fulfill this mission. Otherwise, it will not be able to happen. And of course, this is the need of publishing an annual report on performances. So this is one of the things we talked about that could be collaborated or delegated or to other institutions, public research institutions, or to professional body organizations that would have a better organization to collect these some of these numbers. But of course, this needs to be decided in a country by country basis. Yeah, next one. Yeah, we can go over this. We talked already about it. Regarding communication, this follows from the previous one, at least partially, because there is, after the analysis of all this data, we have a lot of information about the activities in the country that could be shared and discussed and interpreted with professional organizations and communicated to the public. This also helps on this goal of making art activities transparent with reliable, factual and complete information, particularly because there is this also tendency in the society to commercialize a lot many of these provisions and trying to give, I would not say completely wrong information, but a little twisted, that then by someone that is not fully aware of the details will be perceived in a very different way. And so the competent authorities needs to really be aware of this, to correct in this case. Yeah, I think this was a bit what is here. Regarding guidance, again, this falls over what the second speaker, Eurico Reis, already told, that although legislation provides these key legal principles, in fact, what happens, these legal principles cannot be produced every month, and so they need to be clarified for proper implementation by additional text that can be legal text, guidelines, recommendations, and this is a clear role of the competent authority, this guidance. But again, their possibilities, in fact, will depend on the legal organization of the member state, because sometimes this authority needs to go through another authority in order to implement these guidelines. Finally, regarding the ethical overview mission, this, I think, was one of the last missions to be added to the pool, but I think most of us will agree with this. It's important for the competent authority to ensure that practices in ART, namely the more controversial ones regarding, for example, the pre-implantation genetic testing, how is it called nowadays, regarding the PGD or PGS, the use of HLA compatible embryos, sex selection, fertility preservation, non-partner donation, surrogacy are openly debated, considering all the complexities, social, legal, and ethical, that surround them. Also, it's important to monitor the art practices, be attentive to access to care, to assure that access to care is equitable, provide guidelines, monitor and report on the indications for these more controversial techniques, and provide guidelines, monitor and report on the level of non-partner donation compensation and on surrogacy and on cross-border reproductive care, which are more sensitive situations and which indeed can sometimes turn around the goal that is initially held. Thinking on the first question that Cristina raised regarding how Portugal would see, how we would see this situation regarding now opening surrogacy. Of course, we have a very, very strict indications for surrogacy and a very strict accompaniment. But we have also other examples regarding donation that was very open in some countries, for example, in Spain. And of course, it created a big imbalance so that now people go to Spain much more than they go to other countries. So there is more a lot of implications, and this was the opposite. In Spain, only now they are implementing much more strictly the regulation, and so I think we are hopefully walking in the same direction, but with different orders of implementing different things. And like I said regarding the communication mission, it's also important to monitor, discourage, or inhibit the use of commercial advertising for ART, in particular the one with non-partner donated oocytes or surrogacy. So, as final remarks, for ART dedicated competent authorities, I think we all agree that it's important to keep on building expertise and promote exchange of information with professionals. Whatever the structures of the competent authorities, member states should develop high level of expertise and a wide range of missions. So, and in spite of differences observed, competent authorities share the same concerns and face the same challenges. So that is why we envision a network very positively. Cooperation between competent authorities is very welcome. Of course, we can, for specific situations, make use of connections with stakeholders and ask them to come to this meeting, like, for example, to these types of meetings or interactions. An important point is the improved control of direct distribution, both nationally but especially cross-border. This is an important point for several countries that needs to be solved, and I think we are going in that direction. And of course, there is always the challenge to adapt the EU national legal frameworks to the changes that occur in society and in scientific and technological advance. So all this, I think, makes arguments for coordination, cooperation, and so we see this creation of this network very positively. So thank you very much, and I'm now open to questions.
one or two questions if there are any. Otherwise, keep them for the discussion session at the end of the afternoon. Please, questions for Carlos? Okay. I will ask you questions later. Okay, because I do have them. But according to my watch, it's now 16:06.
Yeah, we should go for a coffee break.
So you are expected back in this room, having done everything you need to do, at 16:15, so slightly less than 10 minutes. It's very short, all right? We're then going to adjust the agenda slightly. Okay, so that basically the wrap-up at the end of the afternoon will be shorter than was intended, which is probably a relief, because we can't adjust the times of the evening events very much. Okay, so we do have to stop on time, which is a blessing. Okay, thank you. Coffee, now. Hemopoietic stem cell people in the room, that they don't mind if the ART people now sleep as they did through the ART presentations. With no further ado, Christina's going to present, followed by Salome, followed by Mona, and I think it's a standing up session this time. Anyway. Christina.
Okay, thank you very much. I have the pleasure to present you the results from the work package number 5. Before, of course, I also join everybody else with thanking the organizers of this wonderful meeting and the place where we are now, a very, very important one. So, work package 5 was about hematopoietic stem cells for transplantation, deliverables and outcomes that I will present to you. And the title will be Donor Follow-up and Registry, Issues on the Floor, so something that should be a little bit provocative. I'm here to replace Simonetta Pupella from the Italian National Center of Blood and Letizia Lombardini from my institution, National Center of Transplants. And I will also present the associated partners and collaborating partners that have worked in this work package that was co-led by also by Italy and by Italy and by the Ministry of Health in Croatia. So you can see that there was a lot of can you see? Yes. A lot of countries presented as associated, and also in the collaborating partners you can see all the associations, very important partners for this type of work. Our aims mainly were to develop guidelines for the harmonization of procedures applied by donor follow-up outcome registries for a systematic donor follow-up, to set up the minimum data set and the basic organizational framework for conducting donor follow-up of both unrelated and related donors, to ideally be implemented by donor registries at local and national level, to propose the donor follow-up model to competent authorities for a dissemination to their own organizations in charge of management of the donors of HPC in order to establish a common donor follow-up registry across Europe. So we were totally aware that there is already several, many important, experienced associations that work for donor follow-up, but what our intention was to present to the competent authority what could be the minimum data set that the authorities should really collect and how to harmonize this, and at the end how to submit it to the competent to the Commission, European Commission. Very quickly, this was the chronology of what happened. We started on May 2014 with a kickoff meeting in Luxembourg, as usual, with these joint actions. It is also, as usual, lasting 3 years. The group started to work on November 2014. Many meetings, many drafts of the guideline were written. Then we came up on December 2015 to present our work to the competent authorities of tissues and cells, which is usually very important to see what they think about it, which gives us green light or not quite green light. Then another meeting on June 2016 with new drafts. All the comments were put together. And to make it brief, on September 2017, we had the very last few comments incorporated in the last version, and we sent it to the coordinator for the submission to the commission. So we had a few questions when we came together as a group, and these are those I think it is important to tell you what we thought about. Is the donor follow-up considered a clinical process under the responsibility of each member state for the subsidiarity principle, which means, of course, that competent authorities delegate, so to say, the clinicians to do the process, the clinical process? Could the lack of an internationally recognized guideline providing specific indications on how to perform follow-up mainly for related donors be the cause of the differences among member states, because we knew that there were many differences? Which is the best practice for implementing donor follow-up in order to collect those relevant information? Some collect questionnaires and or physical examination and or blood testing, or some even tailored follow-up mainly for the related donors, not for the unrelated. So, in case of related donors, is the possibility to lose the donor during follow-up high, and does it mainly depend on the patient's arrival? Can we improve this situation anyway? And then, should the maximum number of donations for peripheral blood and for bone marrow be defined in order to guarantee the protection of the donor health? Should standard criteria be defined and shared among member states for establishing when a donor who donated HSC for a patient can donate for another different patient? So I will go very quickly through the tables because the results have been presented rather often, and I would rather leave space to the other speakers. But a few of them I can explain to you. One of the questions was to all the countries that participated in the survey. Does your country collect HSC donor follow-up information? As you can see in the unrelated donor series, 17 of 20 said yes, 3 no. And in the related donor section, 16 said that they would do follow-up on HSC donors. On the right, you see more or less the same response. For which kind of donation are data collected? Only bone marrow? 0. Bone marrow and peripheral blood HSC and also PBCSC. For unrelated, it's the light blue, and for related, the dark blue. You see that all are doing both on both donors, the follow-up. And only peripheral blood, there was only one country saying that it was doing it. Has your country defined standard procedures for donor follow-up? As you can see in the columns of yes, for unrelated we had 12 responding on 14, 7 for the related. And no for defined standard of procedures in 5 countries, and no for the unrelated, and 9 in the related group. I don't know if I can continue, but short and or long-term follow-up, because how much time do we have? How much time should I speak? 3 minutes. Okay, I go further. Okay, I jump to a conclusion.
You can take 5 minutes more.
Okay, I try eventually I go back to these results, because they are obviously also important, but since we don't have much time. So this is the photography of our guidance for establishing a hematopoietic progenitor cells donor follow-up registry. The last version is of 15 September this year. The methodology we used to start with all these questions that I showed you before was where do we start from? And of course we wanted first of all to make a clarification of what the regulatory framework is. Then we also had wanted to work together and know more about the registries, worldwide and international standards, in bone marrow donor registry, world marrow donor association standard provided by FACT-JC, donor outcome registry in the EBMT, and of course a lot of scientific literature. This is the long introduction and the table of contents. It was very extensive, and the annexes contain very detailed all the results from the survey. So at the end, we certainly would like to have types of donor to be followed up for unrelated adult donor, related adult donor, and related pediatric donor for all the three typology of sources, let's say, bone marrow and peripheral blood stem cells and lymphocyte. These were the type of standards that we sent with the questionnaire. That's how they looked. I can leave this. This is something I would like to show you, which is the flow chart of information in case of donor follow-up. So if we hypothetically think about... can you show this here? No. Okay. Do you have a light? A pointer or a mouse here? No. Okay, I have a mouse. Collection center, donor center, transplant center, whatever it is called, is the one who has seen the donor, decides to put the donor in a short or long-term follow-up phase. All the tests are performed, and then two things can happen. The tests are okay, the donor is available, he gets into a donor follow-up outcome registry. Then again, something can happen. This donor can have a serious adverse reaction. So this is going to be communicated to the vigilance competent authority, probably national or the hospital or whatever. But it also is going to go into the annual data reporting or follow-up that then at the end comes to the competent authority and to the European Commission. But if we go up here again where we started and after having performed all the tests of the donor and he has donated, he can go lost to the follow-up, either because he doesn't want or he's not... He's not available, we cannot find him. And then if this is really repeated several times and you cannot find the donor or he doesn't really want to continue, then he's lost, of course. If with a new contact we can find the donor again, then of course he goes into the flow of being registered in a donor follow-up database. And then again, it can happen that he has a serious adverse event or no, and so on, as I said before. So what we did, I have shown you that we had several deliverables. One was a guideline, and then we also prepared a statement that is a kind of accompanying letter to this work, where we want to say something to the Commission. And this is, although the directive underlines, the Tissues and Cells Directive underlines that it is necessary to increase confidence among the member states in the health protection of living donors, and this we can see in a whereas 15, the note I put underneath. It does not oblige member states to put in place a system for the collection of reporting SARS potentially linked to the collection and occurring in the living donors after donation. So it's not a mandatory requirement, but we have to protect the health. Since the follow-up of living donors is definitely recognized as an essential tool for ensuring the health protection of the HPC donors, the present guideline has the aim to provide, establish, or recommend a uniform model for donor follow-up for both unrelated and related donors,
so a model. Recommendations for the management of HPC pediatric donor follow-up, which is already done in some countries. Recommendations for the management of follow-up after multiple donations of HPC or lymphocytes, which is a concerning issue. An appropriate communication flow between the organizations involved in the HSC donor follow-up management and the CAs. I must say personally that it has been in those meetings where we had to discuss with them. They are, of course, the organizations are very, very experienced and very, very strong. And it was an interesting discussion because, of course, we are considered to be very rigid and not in the field. But it was nice because at the end we were able to discuss really together. Donor follow-up and registry issues on the floor. This is the title that I had to present today. And I think these are the most relevant, to my opinion, which requirements on HSC donor follow-up management will be taken into consideration in the European Directives Roadmap to reinforce donors' health protection and to increase confidence among the member states. I think that you all know that European directives are going to be modified sooner or later. There has been a big public consultation about what is maybe not so adequate anymore in the old directives and what we would like to change in the modification of the directives. So this will be important to be there, and I like very much what was said before by Françoise to have an expert group, European expert group, because this could be a strong voice to talk together with a competent authority and a commission when they come up to something that everybody has always said to be important, that the directives should really have a little bit more of specificity for ART because the directives are sometimes not very adequate to the ART problems. Will member states recognize the added value of a donor outcome registry as a functionality needed to get information about both related and unrelated donors? Will member states have adequate human, technical, and financial resources? This is a continuous, repeated argument that is obviously raised in all the discussions because it is important to support a donor outcome follow-up registry function independently if allocated in a registry or in the competent authority organization. Indeed, I would like to underline we did not want to say what has to be done in an organization, who has to get which data. We just want it to be very high level, and this will then depend probably by the political organizational decisions of the single member states. Will member states be capable to reduce costs? We even dare to say that. By promoting collection of related donor follow-up data through existing national registries, we should not duplicate anything, that are already collecting data from unrelated donor centers. So, as I mentioned before, the question of donors follow-up was raised several times during this Brussels meeting in September 20th, where the scope was, it was 250 stakeholders present, and it was, as I said before, to assess the extent to which the current directives have met their original objectives and which should be the modifications to be considered in the future. So among the many issues that were raised and proposals, one of the most important was donors follow-up. So indeed, this is something that many stakeholders, there were associations, there were, patients association, industry, competent authorities, societies, scientific societies, but everybody was very, very in agreement that the donors follow-up information is extremely important. So last is, you probably have seen, it was distributed, it's a leaflet for the donor or somebody who would like to become a donor, and therefore Italy has produced a flyer that is still in draft for people willing to become a donor, an HPC donor, or that recently donated, in order to encourage them to follow up the plan for them.
So let us please have your comments. We would be very grateful. During the last 3 months of Arctics, it will be evaluated by EBMT and WMBDA for comments, and it will be disseminated at the forthcoming EATB, European Association of Tissue Banks, the Congress that is going to be held next October in Treviso, together with the deliverable. I thank you very much.
I'm sure there are lots of questions, but I would like you to write them down, hold them until the end of this session, please. I know it's not equitable, but it's practical. Thank you. Now, Salome has accepted to present in the place of Vanya Nikolov, who is unwell, as I said earlier, and we owe her a great deal of thanks for having picked up this mission about a week ago. So, Salome, you have the floor.
Good afternoon, everybody. So Arctics project under, through the Working Package 5, has as objectives the definition of standards for safety and quality for cord blood banking. And it was in charge to produce a guide for recommendation for cord blood banking involving the minimum quality and safety requirements for authorization and reauthorization of cord blood banking, and also guidelines or guidance for cord blood banking inspectors, providing basic guidance and training for these inspectors. This work has been done and collated by the Minister of Health of Croatia and also for Centro Nazionale di Trapianti from Italy, with all these countries, and also with collaboration with these entities and these authorities in this field. So, the working methodology was, first of all, to know what was the actual situation, and so, identifying the status of cord blood banking in member states. And for that, it was distributed a questionnaire to the competent authorities that was focused on getting information about accreditation programs and standards in using cord blood banking across the European Union and their association with legal requirements. The framework or the regulatory framework is the directories, the European Union directives that we already know quite well, and also the accreditation programs in the field. And the main ones was or are NetCore 5 international standards that covers cord blood collection, banking and releasing, and apply to cord blood units intended for unrelated allogenic use and for related units and story for allogenic or autologous or family use, and provide, of course, the basis for their accreditation program. And also ABB standards, the requirements of the ABB standards included donor eligibility, collection, processing, storage, and application of any type of cellular therapy, and of course they are the basis for their accreditation program. Requirements coming from legislation are mandatory. Standards aim to aid facilities to maintain and enhancing the quality and safety, and announce not best practices, outline the minimum requirements to meet acceptable level of quality, and allows flexibility on how to meet these requirements. Regarding to the models of cord blood banks that we fund in the European Union, according to genetic lineage, the donor of donor and recipients, we have allogenic and autologous, allogenic related or unrelated. Allogenic relates for families with medical indication and for families without medical indication. According to the ownership of the facility, we have public and private facilities. Usually the public ones are for the allogenic use and the related use is only when there is a medical indication. The autologous or family banks or private banks are family use. According to organization, we find the models, the hybrid ones and mixed models. The hybrid ones, there is the family bank, but these units are available under request or on request for use in allogenic also. And the hybrid mixed model, we have a family bank that 1/3 of the unit is available for a public bank and 2/3 of the unit remains in the family one. Looking at the biggest number of banks, there are family banks, and then followed by the allogenic ones and the hybrid ones that least represented. Then, cord blood banks, the authorization for the competent authorities, the national ones, the greatest part of the allogenic banks, they are authorized by their competent authorities, and some of the family banks too. ISO certification is allogenic banks are also most well comply with this certification, family banks much lesser. And according to the accreditation programs, we can see there are mixed accreditation programs, but we can see that FACNET Core is the most used one, and by the allogenic banks too. Well, this reality is a mix of different requirements and different lots of standards, lots of different programs of accreditation, and also the transposition of directives for each country. So in this field, we could identify a variety of technical standards, a diversity of approaches regarding to the same requirements, heterogeneity in the transposition of directives. This reality supports the usefulness of effort on harmonization in the field of cord blood banking, contributing, of course, for quality and safety for everybody. The issues is those ones. So the cord blood banks is a great heterogeneity in procedures and has several models together. The competent authorities of these countries apply different interpretations and implementation of the directives, different approaches of how to meet the requirements, and the competent authorities designating the various nations are also heterogeneous, and the laws governing cord blood banking also differ between countries. It is considered variously as tissues, as an hematological product, as a pharmaceutical product, according to countries. Well, so the guides that has been produced is delivered 9 guides of recommendations for cord blood banking. So, as the main issues related to safety and quality, and we're looking at each cord blood bank should be authorized or licensed by their competent authority for each activity they perform. And it is also recommended the authorization to be granted only on site inspection basis. The cord blood shall not undertake any significant change in their activities without prior approval of the competent authority. If the cord blood bank contracts any other entity for a service, collection, bank, or whatever, each one of these activities shall also be authorized. The tests required for donors shall be done also by a laboratory authorized by the national competent authority. The authorization or licensing must be in accordance with requirements from European directives and national legislation as a minimum requirements. We have also a reality in member states that when we have one member state that collects in other member states, it must comply not only with the European directives, but with all national legislative requirements on the member states where it collects. All member states' competent authorities should closely cooperate in surveillance. Cooperating can include exchange of any information or inspection finding or measures that will be relevant for quality and safety. Cord blood shall submit to the competent authority also an annual report on its activities, and this will be or shall be public too. The quality system is also considering this guide. Each blood bank shall establish and maintain a quality system based on principles of GMPs, and the quality system has to ensure that all key functions of cord blood bank and stored products meet the necessary requirements, and it also covers organization, documentation, quality assurance agreements with third parties. Also is considering collection and processing general aspects and, for example, transport conditions, consent of the donor, eligibility of the donor, reception the units at the bank, processing methodology, cryopreservation and storage, all of the important aspects in these activities. Labeling, which is a very important issue, all units should be identified with a unique identifier in order to ensure the traceability, and transport across national borders is also very important as last, from the last directives. Storage, including storage for microbiological positive units and a stability plan that each cord blood bank must have it in place. Traceability, cord blood banks must assure traceability from donor to recipient and vice versa, but also they should be able to relate all critical materials, reagents, media tests, equipment with each unit, even operators, and also validation tests. Notifications of serious adverse events and serious adverse reactions. The cord blood bank shall take part in a member state system for reporting, investigating and transmitting information about these events, and also put in place an accurate, rapid and verifiable procedure to be able to recall from distribution and suspicious unite or product. Regarding to cord blood banking, competent authority guidelines and inspection. So this guide is aimed to assist and support competent authority inspectors in preparing and conducting on-site inspections on cord blood banking. It summarizes process to be inspected in the cord blood banking. It comprises examples of evidences for the requirements that are specific for cord blood banking. It is basic. It is a basic guide and not a it's not exhaustive handbook, and is not a substitute for established accreditation standards. This guide aims to set harmonization approach for cord blood bank inspections, including inspector education skills and performance, inspection documentation, get mutual recognition of European Union inspection bodies in this field, and also cord blood banks. So the Arctic's outcomes of this working practice 5 was the guide for recommendations for cord blood banking, a cord blood banking inspection guide, and a very important event that was a practical training course on cord blood bank inspection that has taken place this year in February in Italy. And this course gave a practical perception of the heterogeneity between member states and revealed the value for people to know each other, exchange experience, and stresses the importance of this contact in order to create a cord blood bank network of professionals and inspectors. So this guide of recommendation for cord blood bankings and also the guidance for inspectors, the outcomes of this work, we hope, will be harmonization of good practice between member states, setting up a European Union common good practice in cord blood banking, and provide a competent authority with tools to assess the compliance of these activities of cord blood banking, and a significant increase in quality and safety, of course. These guidelines reflect consensus. Positions from Arctic's partners shall be useful for future technical amendments for the current European Union legislation and for tissues and cells, and also in case of the revision of these legislations, as says Christina. So thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. That was very efficient and interesting. So Mona is going to compare the inspection guidelines from the HSC and the ART work packages, and this should be fascinating. And then we'll wrap up. So write down your questions and ask them in 20 minutes. Thank you.
It's not here any longer. It was here. Yeah, but it was transferred here. Carlos, could you find it again? In another folder. No, it's not that one. No. No. But it was here before. This one. No. I'll get the stick again. Now it's there again. Thank you very much. And like everyone else, I'd like first of all to thank our colleagues from Portugal for hosting this event. But then I also need to thank the Croatian partner and the French partner for trusting me in presenting their work, their deliverables for inspection guidance. So these, apart from the courses that they have arranged, one for each area, there are also these inspection guidance that you've heard, and they are available on our website, so I won't go into detail on them, but I will pick out a few points that I think are essential points in these two areas, and also try to translate from the directive what it means in these two areas. So I think you all by now understand why we need specific inspection guidance in these areas, because there is a special terminology, we've heard that, there are special issues for the competent authority, there are very special processes and quality criteria for these two areas that the inspector needs to understand in order to sort of be on the same level and understand the establishment that you are inspecting. But there are also special organizations of these tissue establishments. For instance, in ART, usually also the healthcare is included, the clinic. And depending on whether you are a competent authority also supervising the clinical work or if you just supervise the handling of the tissues and cells, that could be an issue. And the cord blood banks are usually not involved in the clinical work at all. They are banking. That's what they are doing. And they are dependent on other procurement organizations. So this is the picture that the Commission would like to see when it covers from the donor to the recipient. And already in the beginning, the donor, if you compare it with ART, already there you stumble into a problem because most ART establishment would not consider a partner treatment to be a donor. And I mean the oocyte donor is really donating to herself if it's within the partner. So as an inspector you should be careful with the wording and you should sort of think about whether it's a partner or a non-partner or third-party donation. Also, the word distribution is not really sort of accurate for an ART establishment. They usually don't distribute, but they do human application. They don't do transportation unless it is transportation. So distribution is a word that might not sort of be understood properly by all ART establishments. So as an inspector, you have to think about these issues. And also, of course, who can donate to whom and who can receive what is national legislation that I won't go into. But if you stick to the word human application, maybe everyone can sort of understand. Testing requirements, slightly different, whether it's partner or non-partner. Collection, that is usually called oocyte pickup, but the important part is that it's preceded by a hormone stimulation. So it's not just that you go to whoever is donating the tissue or cell. And then, as I said in the beginning, that part is often included in the ART establishment, the clinical part. And the recipient, well, yes, it's the woman, but then you also have a third party. You have a child that is the recipient. So, again, I mean, you have to sort of think of the word you use and what it means. So if you now do the same thing for cord blood, again, you are stuck already with the word donor. Is it the mother that's the donor? Is it the mother and the father? Or is it actually the child that is the donor? Again, you can, as we heard before in the previous talk, that you can donate either to an altruistic cord blood bank, which is sort of handing out the cord blood to whoever needs it, or you can so-called donate it, which is really not donation if it's for family use or for your own use. It's more storage for a fee. And all this, there is, of course, different national legislation. Testing, well, usually you test the mother and the father, but it's actually the cord blood that should be tested, but it's you want to save the amount of the cord blood as much as possible, so you don't do tests unnecessarily, you don't waste that material, because you don't get out so much. Collection or procurement of the cord blood, that is during delivery. And there, of course, you have priorities. There are still midwives that would say that the child needs as much blood of the cord as possible. And if you are not a trained cord blood collection person, then you will pull too hard, which means that you would get maternal blood into that cord blood collection. So, there are special issues that you should not just allow anyone to collect the cord blood. They should be trained to collect it. Now we're back to the processing part, and I guess most of you in this place knows the two different ways of in vitro fertilization, whether it's ICSI or whether it's just in vitro fertilization in a test tube. And everything does not look as it does in the textbook. This is some nice pictures of what it should look like on a fertilized oocyte, day 2, day 3, day 4, etc. And it requires some certain skills to decide which embryo is good enough to be used for embryo transfer. So I'm not saying that the inspector should be able to do this quality classification, but the inspector should be aware of the quality parameters that this particular ART establishment have, and they should understand the importance of them. And if they have to, for some reason, not follow their own quality parameters, that should be documented and the reason why. It's the same issue with the cord blood banking. Usually you talk about hematopoietic stem cells, which is not really true. It's more hematopoietic progenitor cells. The classical part is that you have a volume criteria, you have a total number of cell criteria, sterility, of course, viability. Whereas the true thing is that you do have... There's a pointer on this one, too?
Yes, the middle.
The middle one. Oops. Well, it doesn't matter. You can see the hematopoietic sort of stem and progenitor cells, there are lots of them, except that in reality there are not that many, and less than 1% usually. And if you talk about hematopoietic progenitor cells, you should be able to show that that is actually what you have. There is a surface marker for these cells, and that should be as a minimum criteria. If you say that you are collecting stem cells or progenitor cells, you should show that you have them there. Then you should also show that they can function. So there are functional assays to show that they're in there. HLA typing, if you are going to have them through a registry. viability, of course, after freezing, because there are some similarities between cord blood and ART, believe it or not. It's the storage, and there are cross-border activities, and there is risk of illegal commercialization in both of these areas. So if we go to storage, these are vulnerable cells. They are very sensitive, for instance, to any organic solvents left in the air, so they would die immediately. They are stored in liquid nitrogen or in the vapor phase. There are, of course, special methods for cryopreservation. You can do it this way or that way. There are certain methods for how you thaw these cells. So as an inspector, you should make sure that they have control over these things, that they maintain the quality after freezing, because both of these cells are usually stored frozen. And, of course, the traceability issue. For cord blood, you have a traceability from a third person, from a child, to a recipient. And in the other way around, for ART, you have it from a donor to a third person, a child, not just the recipient. And something that I think one should be aware of is that usually, quite often actually, you see these advertising things that they sort of more or less promise that they can save your child from any disease because this is a rapidly developing area. And then they give some examples. I mean, I didn't list all the 80 diseases, but I can guarantee you that most of them were congenital, which is not a very good idea to do an autologous transplant in. And, I mean, all these promises, you should be aware of them. And they are often cross-border activities. Also for ART, you have these advertising things. Become an egg donor. You can choose a nice looking girl, and she gets, like, what is it, $9,000 to $15,000 for donating her eggs. And then you can also, if you look, see that some of them actually regret what they did. This woman, she got $8,000 and she got 4 days spent on a luxury hotel in San Diego. And she only took the offer because she wanted to meet her boyfriend who lived across the other side of US. And they didn't have money enough to meet so often. So she thought this was a perfect example or perfect opportunity to meet her boyfriend in a luxury hotel. But she regretted. It's a long article, but that's the essence of it. So I think, to finish up, that both for ART and cord blood, there are cross-border activities. For ART, it's either the donors or patients because something is illegal in your own country or it's cheaper in another country. And for cord blood, it's something that we heard about right now, that you often have collection in one country and storage in another country, and who is actually guaranteeing the quality, who is doing the procurement. Is it the father that gets a kit from the cord blood bank? You can collect, that's no big deal. So I hope that you now agree with me that we do need trained inspectors for these two areas. And we also think I need a network between the competent authorities. And I would like to point out, not only in the ART, a network would be good also for the cord blood banking. And thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Mona. That was really fascinating. That was great. Questions for Mona? Questions for Savani? Questions for Christina? We have actually a good half hour. So we would like to hear other voices. Thank you, York.
So first of all, I would like to congratulate the team from Deliverable 8 on the hematopoietic progenitor cell donor follow-up. I think they have really done a great job. And I think this project is really ready now also for implementation. And I think it's also a great example how needs from the transplant community on one side, from the unrelated donor registries, and from the authorities can meet on a common platform. And so my question would be, what are your next step to implement the deliverables you have now finalized?
Thank you, first of all, for these compliments that I will bring to the whole group. Thank you. Well, as you have seen, there is a message that we sent to the competent authorities. Most of them were in our group, so we have several times occasions to write guidelines, meet them at congresses and so on. So there we would like to disseminate what we have done. As I mentioned before, in the European Congress we will have next week, we will bring our work, we will talk about it. Of course, as it was, as you have seen, the title was, which are the issues on the floor? They are a little bit on the floor yet. They have to be raised absolutely in meetings that we have to do in our countries, and then keep the network together, because I think this donor follow-up document is not finished yet. I'm sure that there will be a second phase where we will hopefully come to more agreement and less issues to be solved. So to give you the real answer to your question is, we will do our best. The only way we know is to discuss together, come together, have these meetings, and see the data that registries are using. We are doing something very similar in another work package in Vistart on the clinical follow-up and with recipients. And we have involved several registries because they have a lot of experience. So we would like to see what their point of view is. They had different objectives from the competent authority, but one is certainly common. How can we know more about it and share this? So this is the basis, of course. But I'm very much looking forward personally to work with registries that already are doing this kind of job, and maybe we can influence them also in some way and have their important information disseminated up to the European Commission also. I don't know if I answered your questions. Question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
If I may, Christina, when you were presented, if I'm not wrong, you said that one of the challenges facing the competent authorities in donor follow-up activities was resources. And if I'm not wrong, the last time I spoke with Jörg, he actually had said some quite useful things about that. Could you reopen that conversation for the benefit of the floor, please? Do you remember in July in Paris what you said about that?
Yeah, I think a lot of infrastructure is already there. So we have different outcome registries that are already existing. And there are also a lot of people around that are highly motivated to do these things. And I think it's important to find the collaborations between donors and collection centers, registries, and you can also delegate some kind of the work, for example, to the registry for unrelated donors. I think there are different types of solutions possible for different countries, so that you can concentrate your resources. You have one person who does the follow-up for several centers, for several donor centers, instead of every collection center who has to assign this task to somebody who has already a lot of other work. And I think one thing that is really important is, even if it's only one person, this one has to be paid in a way. And I think that's a very important issue that this initiative also transfers to a law at the end, because when you have a law, then you have also the possibility to regulate how the money is transferred. Yeah, I think so. That's maybe the best way to do. Of course, the authorities have to include this into the law. But as again, I think hematopoietic stem cell transplantation involves two individuals. One is the patient, one is the donor. And so the transplant fee should also include the need of both of them. I think that's the way to go.
The transplant fee should cover not only the beneficiary costs, but also the donor costs and the donor follower costs. Now, is that loud enough? Yes.
Hi, Owen McGrath from EBMT. So in a few contexts, you've mentioned, or it's been discussed, the idea of the competent authority network, and we would be very, very happy to see that develop. In fact, after 13 years of the directive, it's extraordinary that this network hasn't already been created in some shape or form. I know you have the twice-yearly competent authority meeting. And I say that because anecdotally, at least, the feedback to us is from the community is the differences across borders, which is solved by dialogue, sharing experience, talking, listening, etc., etc. And then a comment about the cord blood banks, and maybe Salome might also comment on this. So we know that cord blood is facing some challenges, particularly from mismatched HLA mismatched donors. So in a very drastic or very negative scenario, you could have cord blood banks disappearing. And I just wonder, is there a scenario in the future where we could have large quantities of collected cells being discarded and the consent issue around that from the parents who have donated in the past? It's flagging a scenario which might not happen, but I'd just be curious about that.
Well, I don't know to define the future. Anyway, there are a lot of units that are collected, that are stored, and they are never going to be able to be applied in transplantation or even in other kind of treatments, because really we know that the heterogeneity of the worldwide inventory of cord blood is so great that really the first units or the first years of cryopreservation, we know that these units don't have they're never going to be applied, whatever the phenology. So I don't know what's going to happen to them. We have a past problem also similar to that one. But I think this is a very difficult decision, and I think this should be a decision taken by different partners and different societies together. Because they are collected and they are cryopreserved. So I don't know a direct answer to you, but I think it's something that you have to face it because it is reality. Sorry, I don't have an answer.
Hi, I'm Dan Luscalo from Romania. After the course in Rome in June, in Vistart, I understand that the European Commission will make a group of 30 or 40 inspectors for banks, tissues and cells banks. Do you expect those inspectors to be retrained for ART, or do you think that for ART you'll have different inspectors than those who absolved the course in Rome?
Christine, you are the person who can answer this question,
well,
I hope.
Well, it's only because it was in Rome, but it should be Mona.
Is there anybody in the room who knows the answer to this, who knows about
you?
The European
Commission? maybe we have somebody who is an expert of inspections in a work package.
I'm one of the inspectors who were in Rome. That's why I'm asking you if we will have to be trained in art, or for art will be trained different people for inspection.
There is no. I'm now stop kidding. Sorry.
I would think from what I've heard, and then I'm no expert, from what I've heard this afternoon, what a recommendation would be from Mona would be that if an inspector was going to inspect an ART, then they should have training in the field of ART before doing this. Does that answer your question? That's what she would say.
Well, that's what you would say. I was just referring to what W before you say it. But I agree. I mean, it's not a big problem, is it?
I don't think it will be a big problem to do the inspection. Actually, in Romania, I'm doing also the IVF, the art inspections, but we always ask to be part of the inspection committee one of the embryologists, so in order to have an expertise, a better expertise than ours.
Yeah.
But we are doing the inspection.
So am I.
Can I change the subject slightly? Do you have a question, Françoise?
Do we have time to learn more about Vistart and the project to create an inspectorate from the Commission?
I think we should and take it later, because I think we should stay on subject, because I want to challenge. I want to ask Carlos about the missions in Artix, which he presented, and nobody asked any questions about. So I'd like us to just have a quick look at the ART, and we can find out more about the Vistart information from that in a minute. All right, because it probably takes quite a lot of explaining. But okay, so if I may, Carlos, you presented these 8 missions, yeah, fine, okay, and. You know, that's something that sort of came out of the work. It's something that's sort of crystallized out of all of the meetings we've heard over the last 3.5 years. When I was in Stockholm with you, I didn't get the feeling that all of the people that were in the room actually agreed. I don't think there's a consensus around those 8 missions. I think there are people who think that the only thing you need to do is to inspect and to authorize. And all things can be solved like that. So, do you agree with them? Do they agree with us? And how are we going to... do they exist? Am I wrong? Or is that actually how this is seen in some countries? And how are we going to move forward so that this proposition, which today is no more than that, I think, can evolve perhaps to be consensual or... Thank you.
Thank you, Nigel. Well, what I think about that is like you said, I think there are these two visions of the authority. One, it's very reductionist, which is you focus on these small tasks that you need to do to evaluate, follow, do not cross what the directive, for example, tells you that you should inspect or be sure, yeah. And so you restrict to that. You don't want to go more than that. This has the advantage that you need less time, yeah, because the other issues. The ones that take a lot of time to discuss, they take a lot of time. You need a lot of time. You need more resources if you think on the data collection also, if you think on analyzing the collection and the follow-up. So I think this vision many times is associated, from the authorities, associated with the lack of resources. And so if you have to concentrate and diminish in the essential that will be the legal requirement, and that is following this type of very precise things to do. If you are in a position where you have more resources, you have more people from this different backgrounds that can, this would be very useful on my, so I position myself on the other view, the view that the authority would not be restricted to what the directives require, because it's a better way to evaluate the outcome. You see, for example, the outcome of the process of checking if there is not infections, or if the if all the registers are carefully done. Of course, it's very important by itself, but does not follow the outcome. And in ART and or in Curd Blood also, I would think the same. The outcome is not only that the process does not stop there. Then there is a pregnancy. Then there are can be multiple pregnancy, like with two or three embryos. Then there is an effect that this may have upon the child. This is known. It's not known from ART. It's known from the general population. If you have triplets, they are born earlier. They have more problems because of that. They are born with less weight. And so all of this needs to be pulled together to evaluate the little process that you try to evaluate if you restrict to the directive. You see, so you go much further if you take over more missions. But of course, this can only be done with resources. Otherwise, you restrict to the... And we heard our colleagues from the Czech Republic, I think it was, they have a huge amount of work because they have so many centers to evaluate. They have the ART centers, but they have all the other tissue establishments to inspect. So they are always very busy, and of course they don't have time to discuss other things, and they just rely on. So that is my vision, but I think we should move on the more broad situation where an authority has capability to fulfill all these missions.
I'll take the word anyway. Sorry.
Take it. You have 2 minutes.
Okay. 2 minutes, I have less than 2 minutes. I don't agree with you, Nigel. I got the impression from Stockholm that everyone agrees on the 8 missions. It's just that they don't agree that it necessarily has to be one and the same competent authority. It can be done by different entities, and some parts one competent authority and other parts another competent authority.
Would our colleagues from the Czech Republic like to say anything about that now? Or maybe the people from Slovakia, or maybe elsewhere? It would be, maybe not today, but I would like to, it's not necessarily, I'm not quite sure. It's certainly the feeling I got was not unanimous, absolute adherence.
Well, hello. Hello. Just Richard Ford from the HPRA in Ireland. So I had a point, but I think I might be going off point now. I kind of wanted to talk about a small bit about everything, really. But it was really around the 8 points for the competent authority, as well as, say, the shared network for ARTQUIS, and tying it into, say, the VISTART project, which I would be involved in from the HPRA. So I think we, you know, agree, or from what I took from Stockholm around the 8 principles, is that these would be 8 ideal principles for competent authorities. However, you know, given the disparity between the different regulatory authorities across Europe, you know, not necessarily all competent authorities would have a regulatory framework with which to work with those principles, or would be required to implement those principles. But they would be, I suppose, they would be ideal principles to have. But I suppose one thing that is common across all the member states and everybody in the room is that the European tissue directives apply to tissue, to ART and cord blood. And they covered the inspection and the authorization, vigilance, and these principles are uniformed across all of the member states, no matter what national regulations are in place. And I suppose for that reason, then, just to tie it in then with the shared network, and Vistart, I've got a lot of things going on in my head, I suppose. So just to give you a brief background about Vistart. Vistart is it's a European-funded project, much like Artquis, which looks at vigilance and inspections for blood, tissues and cells, including assisted reproduction. And within that Vistart joint action, there is that sustainability inbuilt in the projects. And from what, from the work packages that have been developed, the European Commission have discussed perhaps having an inspections work group hosted by the Commission that would discuss inspection related topics related to blood, tissues and cells and assisted reproduction. And I suppose that's why when I think of the shared network for Artequis, if it was to be hosted by the Commission, if a shared network for Artequis was to be hosted by the Commission or in some way supported by the Commission, perhaps their focus would be that inspection, authorization and vigilance aspects, or how the tissues and cells directives apply, would be the focus of those work groups, as opposed to perhaps other issues like surrogacy, like donation aspects, ethical aspects that affect us all, but perhaps may not be supported in a working group or an inspections working group at the Commission. So that's maybe something to think about in terms of the shared network if the Commission were to be involved. And I don't think there's anybody, I don't know whether there is anybody here from the Commission, I hope not. But that, in a roundabout way, is what I was thinking. So hopefully that kind of clears up some.
Thanks, that's very useful. And basically, I think many of you are saying there are two levels of work here. There are things that have got regulatory basis and things that don't. It would be perhaps a shame if the networks only dealt with the things with regulatory basis, because maybe the soft things to be developed, and as Eureka was saying earlier, it's by regulation evolves, and it's only by communicating around the soft elements that regulation can evolve. Mm-hmm. But wonderful, and that answered Francois's question, I hope, as well. Now, Nick, you have 7 minutes and 30 seconds to wrap up. And if you take 1 minute, we'll love you, but, you can take 7 minutes and 30 seconds.
So we've all been sitting here for six and a half hours. We've heard many thousands of words spoken. We've seen lots of speakers. We've had lovely lunch, haven't we, colleagues? Lovely cups of tea and coffee and cakes. And I'm not going to detain you. I stand between you and your tour of Parliament, and probably stand between you and dinner. So Richard said some of what I was going to say, in terms of we are here, aren't we, to minimise, reduce harm. First of all, do no harm. That's what Eureka said. If we can't take something from today and apply it back into your own place of work, listening to all these experts, how we kind of translate the directives at a high level, then apply them progressively over many years. I was taken with Joe's comment, it's taken us how many years to get to this point? It'll probably take us a few more years to get even better. These you know, the longest march started with the first step, and we're some steps in, but because the directive is so broad, it's taken a long time to get to narrow it down. And you know better than anyone else what are the barriers in your countries and in your competent authority and in your teams in your competent authority and your levels of expertise in the competent authority. So all that remains for me to say is well done for listening. Well done for writing stuff down and applying it back in your place of work. Enjoy the tour, and I look forward to chatting to you more informally over dinner. Thank you for your attention. Well done.
Thank you very much. You are free. If anybody has any logistic difficulties, problems, doesn't know where they're sleeping or how they're moving around, please let us know quickly, and we'll go and visit this wonderful building. Thank you very much.
Maybe just following suggestion of Marina just a while ago, maybe we could take advantage of this small period to take a general picture of the whole group in the stairs that just by here, so we have a nice picture from this old meeting, because in here it's difficult.
Wonderful idea. Thank you, Marina.